Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses for an audience of entrepreneurs who are building their businesses or looking for new ideas for businesses. Joining me is a guy who worked for General Mills. So he's had some experience with food products and what's the category name? It's GC.
Well, there's two of them. There's CPG, which is consumer packaged goods, or in a broader sense, there's FMCG, fast moving consumer goods.
And that's what you worked in at General Mills.
That's correct. I was on the Cheerios team.
Really?
I was. Yeah, it was a fun one.
What did you do on the Cheerios team?
I had the only job in marketing that you could hold without an MBA. So I was a marketing analyst. And I dealt with a lot of sales data, sales reporting, really analyzing the category and presenting it to kind of the upper level management.
And just like you, my listener, he's someone who said, I want to start my own company. And so he started doing research. He's got more of a research background than the two of us, but I want to learn from his approach. One of the things that he did was he went to Google Trends and he said, hey, you know, I drink cold brew coffee. It looks like people are searching for cold brew coffee more and more. I'm just going to try launching a cold brew coffee company. He did. It's called Busy Coffee. It's been selling on Amazon. I've got a quote here on my iPad where he said, before we got started, Andrew, getting customers on Amazon is easy. And then he said, now we're transitioning to getting them on our website. And I said, let's talk about that in the interview. How did he get customers on Amazon, which is a really competitive space? And what's he doing now to get customers on his own website? And we can do this all thanks to two phenomenal sponsors. The first, if you need a website hosted, go to hostgator.com/Mixergy. And the second, I want to tell you about a guest that I just booked a few minutes ago who, when he needs developers, he just goes to TopTal. We happen to talk about that. And I'll tell you why you should be going to toptal.com/Mixergy. But first, Alex French. Such a cool last name, dude. How much revenue are you guys doing with Busy Coffee?
You know, we're not comfortable really fully articulating that, but, you know, we have been the best seller on Amazon for 2 years. We also, you know, what I can say is we have a 15% market share.
15% market share. 15 out of 100 people who are buying coffee on Amazon?
Specifically in our category segment.
Cold brew coffee. Yep. Hey, can you just give me a ballpark? Is it over 5 million in sales? Is it over 10? Just anything that gives me a sense of size.
Yeah, we're under 10, but we are over 1. So okay. We're kind of in that $1 to $10 million range.
Profitable?
Yeah.
Outside funding?
Yes, we've raised just shy of 2.5 million.
From?
Friends, family, some family offices, and then some micro VCs.
All right. When you were telling me about Cheerios, I started to wonder, what did you do that was exciting for you at Cheerios, the cereal brand?
So I love data, and I had access to all of the data that any nerd could want. So every single category, every product, whether that was Tide soap, chewing gum. So I just got to look at how big categories were, which was really fun. Specifically on the Cheerios team, it's their largest, most profitable brand. They have over $100 million marketing budget. And so I got to be a part of TV ads, their Super Bowl commercials.
What do you do about data that helps you with the Super Bowl ad?
So you would just look at who's the consumer segment, where are you winning or losing in a market, whether that market is Florida or it's Walmart. And so you can splice and dice everything, essentially, even different pack sizes, pricing, promotions. And so we're able to see that, you know, we're looking at competitors' data as well. So we see that Kellogg's is doing a huge Super Bowl thing. We're able to get a different display and block them in the market.
And that's what you would do.
And then we report on it. Yeah.
Okay, is there one win that you especially remember that we would understand?
You know, I was a part of this. We did a partnership with Nelly, the rapper. And so that was one thing where we had a huge TV spot and they did radio ads and custom swag and shoes and gear and they sent it to influencers. That was probably one of the most unique things that we got to be a part of there.
Nelly and Cheerios.
Yeah.
And did the data pan out?
It did. It did. Because they, you know, we looked at the data and we said we're not winning as well in the African American market as we'd like to. And so they looked at the geography. I helped pull the data. And then we basically did the campaign and analyzed it, and then, you know, showed that there was a lift and there was a positive ROI to that.
Yeah, I see all kinds of news stories about it. Nelly explains his new Honey Nut Cheerios commercial. Nelly and General Mills debut Honey Nut Cheerios commercial. When you decided, or when you were starting to think about wanting to start a new company, what were you reading? What influences did you have?
A lot of it is, as I was in at General Mills, I sat next to someone who was in the thing called Consumer Insights. And that's basically just talking to customers, consumers, and learning about why they're consuming the things that they are. And one of the biggest insights that I learned specifically in the food industry is that almost every trend is driven by health trends or fitness or diets. And so a lot of what I did was just stayed very close to, at the time, CrossFit was huge. And so we looked at a lot of those things. Adventure racing was very large. So looking at those, just playing around with all those data sources.
But there aren't that many people who are adventure racers or watch adventure racers. Are you saying that what they do tends to influence disproportionately?
That's exactly right.
Like
and
what?
So when you look at CrossFit is a wonderful example.
Okay.
Not everyone does CrossFit. Most people don't. Most people think CrossFit people are generally kind of jerks and super macho, but we look to them because they are very fit. And so even though we may not have the strict diet that we do, we're still going to look to them for tips and tricks.
Like, what's an example of something that's crossed over from CrossFit to mainstream?
The best example is RX Bar. So when they launched, they sold exclusively direct to CrossFit gyms. And I think it was 2 years ago, they sold for $600 million, the company.
Okay. All right. So you're saying there's something here. What is it that super health conscious people are doing that might cross over to the general population? And what are some of the things that you saw?
So some of the major trends, and I'm not going to be specific on the product format, but what we were seeing was fewer ingredients, lower sugar, clean ingredient deck, ingredient forward products. And so you'll see an example was like chia. That was a really big deal for about 7 years. There was a brand called Mama Chia. And then you saw chia seeds in everything. And that was driven by the health and wellness community because it had good antioxidants and it had a functional benefit to it.
Okay.
And so we looked at kind of all of those things. And then we would then try and create our product innovations at General Mills that would align with those functional benefits of products.
When you were pitching me on being on Mixergy, and I think we were introduced to a friend where I was reaching out to say, who should I be interviewing? And they introduced me to you and you said, Andrew, look, this is what we saw. You sent me a Google Trends report that was just remarkable. You can clearly see an upward trend with a giant spike every summer, right? When the weather gets warm, for cold brew coffee. You saw that how? Beyond your own drinking, what did you see that told you this is coming? Because what you're showing me here was just starting in 2014, and you started 2015.
Yep.
How did you know?
Well, it kind of goes back to I was looking at everything, and I knew that I wanted to be in the food and beverage industry because that's what I was doing with my job, and I felt I had kind of a leg up. So as I was mentioning, I was looking at every research report I could that my desk mate had, and everything pointed to fewer calories, lower sugar, fewer ingredients, craft product. And I was drinking cold brew myself. For me, it was on the functional side because I wanted a higher caffeine. And candidly, I just don't like hot beverages. So I was drinking it myself, and it kind of aligned with this internal Venn diagram I had of what a good business was to me. And it was consumable, it was searchable, it was craft, and it hit all those health attributes that I was thinking of. And so then I just started searching and looking at how were people searching, Google
Trends.
We'll
get to the search. Let me take a moment.
Yeah, of course.
Well, it seems like what you're saying is, let's say Coca-Cola. Not only are the ingredient lists not clean, you don't really know how much and what's going into it. And they're proud of that, right? The secret formula. He said, the world still wants caffeine the way that I, Alex French, does. they want a cleaner ingredient deck, as you said. Cold brew gives them that. It's very clear what's in it. This could be the new form of caffeine. It's a craft drink that's accepted, right? You care about your barista, the way that she pours coffee. People care about what's in it. Got it. That's the qualitative stuff that went in before we get into the quantitative. Am I right?
Yep, that's exactly right.
It does make a lot of sense when you put it that way. But before I continue, I have to say that immediately when I think of that, I go, well, you got major coffee players that are already in this space that are going to jump in. They've got a brand name. They've got like, you got Starbucks, you've got Nestle, you've got, was Blue Bottle around at the time? Maybe on that level, there wasn't an alternative to Starbucks. Why weren't you scared at that point and said, this is too big? These players are too big.
A lot of it was my gut reaction, because I was even thinking, looking at Maxwell House and Folgers and the really big ones that would have 30, 40% market share. Little known fact, Folgers is still the number one market share. It is not Starbucks. And then it's Maxwell House. And so I was looking at those really big brands, thinking to myself, again, doing lots of consumer research, knowing that this consumer is a millennial, generally speaking. They don't like Folgers. They don't want to drink Folgers. They don't want to drink Maxwell House. So there's a great opportunity for someone to be a millennial focused brand within this category, because it's going to be inauthentic. We talked a lot about authenticity of brands at the time, and it was going to be very inauthentic for Folgers or Maxwell House to launch a cold brew brand. So our thought was long term, there's opportunity to be that, to be that gap.
And you almost have an advantage because you're not one of the bigger players. Every time I say Starbucks, I feel like Starbucks is a generic brand at this point. If somebody's looking for a craft product, that's too generic to feel proud to be a Starbucks drinker. What about this? Before we get again into the quantitative stuff, it's also a heavy thing to ship. If I'm thinking about a world that's moving towards online, I'm thinking about powdered coffee more than I am thinking about, or coffee beans, than I am about the drink. What did you think about that?
You're exactly right. And when we started, our initial plan was to not even manufacture products, but to leverage the search traffic to get affiliate sales to other people. Because we listened to the 4-Hour Work Week, and that was the model. But you're spot on. And so our model was to do that, leveraging the search. And as we got into it, we realized that, yeah, there's no unit economics. You cannot be profitable shipping liquids online.
You realize you could not do that. They couldn't do that.
No one can. And the only way you can is by having a large multi-pack. And then at that point, you're challenged with getting people to try the product.
All right. So we're going to get into that. That this was an issue. Somehow you still proceeded despite that. Because you were thinking about affiliate sales first. Well, tell me about the data. What were you seeing that said, it's time for me to get into the space?
The data was, as I kind of showed in the Google Trends, and for the listeners, if you just go to Google Trends and search in cold brew coffee, you'll see it was an exploding category. I mean, there was millions of searches a month that we were seeing, and there was no clear winner. There was no authority figure. There was no one that was leveraging all of this traffic. And that really was the start of it. As I mentioned, our original plan was to just take that traffic and affiliate it and send the traffic to someone else and get a dollar for every time we did that. That was the plan. And then what we did is we found out, so I'm in Minnesota, where Target and both Best Buy are located. And at that time, it was, you actually couldn't do affiliate revenue through Minnesota, through the laws. And so we had to scrap it right out of the gates. And then to test it, we basically did a Kickstarter campaign and put up a product that was basically fake. Maybe it was Indiegogo. And then just tested to see if people were willing to buy a liquid coffee product online. And it was actually a different brand at the time. It was called Cause Coffee. And it worked. And so we tested very cheaply, very small. And I don't know, maybe we did like $5,000 or something like that. But it was enough for us to say there's a ton of people searching for this and people are willing to buy stuff online. Let's go give it a shot.
I'm looking it up. Cause, K-O-S?
C-A-U-S-E.
Oh, got it. And you saw people are willing to go buy coffee online in multi-packs. And that's what you need in order to make the economics work.
That's what we needed. And we started, and we were of the camp of, you know, I saw you had the founder of Kavita on. You have to get to scale to really make any sort of money. So we said, I think we can get there someday. And that was the hope.
How did you get all those people to go to Indiegogo or Kickstarter or whatever you were on?
At the time, we leveraged a lot. I think it was 2014, maybe 2015. We reached out to a lot of kind of influencers, if you will. The brand was very focused on entrepreneurship and supporting the cause, if you will. And so we reached out to a lot of entrepreneurial influencers, sent them swag kits with boxes and product.
Got it.
And asked that they share it for us.
Man, 5,000 is not that much, though.
It's not nearly enough, but it was just that vote of confidence. You know, I had been working in corporate America, and taking that leap from corporate America to entrepreneurship, you know, I just needed some level of confidence that my idea, people were willing to vote with their dollars.
I wonder why you decided to still go online. Why not go into stores? I keep thinking about, there are entrepreneurs who I interviewed. I forget the name of that brand. That has coconut chips, like slices of coconut in bags. I remember since I interviewed them, I see them in the freaking stores all the time now. They're just a standard product. At the time that they started, it felt like a weird thing for a startup to be able to make it into stores across the country, and they're just blowing up. I'm wondering why you, with your experience, didn't say, forget online. Some things are better offline. Let's just go into stores the way that smaller indie drinks did.
So our original plan was always affiliates online. So that felt the most logical to us. I will say that we've tried to get into retail many, many times. We're finally cracking the nut. My thought was, I worked at Best Buy. I worked at General Mills. I'm going to get into Target. I'm going to get into Kroger. And that is very, very, very difficult because we have to steal space from a global company that has billions of dollars, and they don't want me in there. So it's actually very difficult to get into those grocery stores where you can move enough volume to generate actual revenue.
All right. To me, it seems like you did a lot of research, the research that there's a chance, but it's not likely. And you said, oh man, there's a chance. And your entrepreneurial heart allowed you to go where your corporate head wouldn't have taken you. Am I right?
You are spot on.
All right, let me talk about my first sponsor and then get back into the story. My first sponsor is a company called TopTal. The guys over at TopTal, Alex, introduced me to someone who knew my work because he's a longtime Mixer D listener. Guy runs a company called Picker. Anytime an influencer online, somebody who publishes on Instagram, on YouTube, whatever, in the Spanish world wants to link out to the products they love, they have a very simple way to do it with Picker. They just easily pick the products they love or the products they mention in a post or whatever. Picker makes it all look beautiful, and then people can go and click on it and buy it. And if they do, and they're an influencer, they get a cut of the sales that happen because of their link. Totally makes a lot of sense. I said, what are you guys doing with TopTal? I said, we had this issue. We needed somebody to create a web page for us that was an aggregation page, and it would have taken 21 story points, which for us means 7 days. I said, you have a developer, right? I go, yeah, that doesn't seem like a long time. They said, no, it doesn't. But we went to Thomas over at TopTal, and Thomas said he could put it together in a day or two. We said, that's faster than 7 days. So we hired TopTal. We hired Thomas through TopTal, and within a day or two, he was able to put it together. And that's the beauty of TopTal. You need somebody, they're there, and they could do it really fast for you. So my response to this founder of Picker was, how is it that someone at TopTal is going to beat someone at your company to creating a product for your company? How did your people know your product and your software better than anyone else? And he said, well, actually, we've worked with Thomas at TopTal several times in the past. What we do is whenever we need him, we just go and hire him from TopTal. Whenever we don't, we just move on and we keep on building with our own team. When we need something fast, we go to TopTal. And so the reason I'm bringing this up is I think a lot of people, when they hear me say, if you're hiring, go to toptal.com/Mixergy, and they think, oh, I have a full-time hire, I should go there. What they should be thinking of is someone like Enric from Picker, who says, I just need this one thing done right now, expertly done, really fast, and I'm going to go to TopTal. And then when I don't need it, I've got flexibility not to have that long-term commitment. So if you're out there listening to me and you want to hire developers who are the best of the best developers, go to toptal.com/mixergy. Yes, you can do full-time people. You can have a team of people, but you could also do what Picker does, which is hire someone for a quick project that's done right and move on. And then when you need them again, you'll be able to go back to TopTal. For details on how to do that and how to make it work for your company, just start a call with somebody at TopTal. And if you use my URL, not only will you get to start a call with them, you'll get 80 hours of developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours, in addition to a no-risk trial period. Really, they're making it super simple. All you have to do is go to toptal.com/mixergy. Alex, you should write this down now that you're getting your own web development. That's toptal.com/mixergy, toptal.com/mixergy. You decided to sell on Amazon eventually. Let's take a few minutes to talk about how to create the product and then talk about marketing. What did you do to create it to make sure that you had something that you could be proud of?
So we spent a ton of time building out our product and creating the TPO, or the total product offering, as some would call it. And so I'm very fortunate. My business partner, Andrew, is a mechanical engineer and a perfectionist by nature. And so we looked at everything. We learned everything we possibly could about the coffee supply chain and origins and roast profiles and grind size and brew times. So we took classes. We did everything that we could. We tried all of our competitors, and we plotted them on this thing called the Specialty Coffee Association Flavor Wheel. So we thought we had a good idea of what we were doing. We went to all of our local co-ops, and we cold brewed every type of coffee you could imagine: single origin, light roast, medium roast, blends. We scaled them. I remember getting up at 5 a.m. before our desk jobs and drinking 4 cups of coffee before getting into work, rating everything. And then we went to that next level of detail. And we actually, I'd mentioned my coworker at General Mills, who was in Consumer Insights. We actually hired her to create a consumer learning plan. And so we brought in 100 self-proclaimed cold brew coffee enthusiasts. And we asked them to look at the flavor wheel and tell us blindly which types of coffees they liked and what about them they liked. And we had really then kind of figured out a really good idea of what that perfect taste profile is for a cold brew coffee. And then we just reverse engineered those flavor attributes based on our previous flavor notes of which origins create which taste profiles, and then kind of blended them all together. And then that was on the coffee side. After that, we looked at all the different brewing processes and types to get us there, packaging formats. So once we had our own liquid and brewing process established, we then went and found some manufacturers that had brewing capabilities, started at beer breweries, and then tried to find some that were willing to do some R&D with us. And then the next phase was finding some roasters that were in that venue.
Okay. And then is this cold brew bottle the first thing that you came up with?
Yep, that's exactly okay. Right. It's a cold brew coffee concentrate.
Got it. And that's one of the ways that you're able to deal with the fact that shipping liquids is heavy and tough. So you send over a concentrate, people add a little bit of water to it, cold water?
Yeah, generally speaking, most people will consume it cold. The vast majority, some do heat it up in the winter, but 95% of them drink it cold.
All right. You got into Amazon, I'm assuming, because that was the fastest way to get started. Am I right?
Yep, that's exactly right. We had pretty serious challenges getting into retail stores right out of the gates. And we had quit our jobs. And at this point, we were really all in. And, you know, you got to start making some money at that point. So we had, I mentioned I worked at Best Buy previously. And one of my really good friends there had left to work for Amazon. He worked there for a couple of years and then actually started an Amazon agency to help brands get set up on Amazon. So we basically threw it over the fence to him and got up and running as quickly as we could.
It's a lot of money, it feels like. You're hiring somebody, you're throwing it over to an outside agency, et cetera. Where's the money coming from?
So my business partner and I invested everything that we had in total in doing all of the R&D and the product launches was about $50,000 of our own money. That we had just saved up from our corporate lives. And then we ended up getting into a food accelerator called FoodX in New York. Mm-hmm. And then that gave us the next bit of capital to do our first major production run so that we had inventory to start selling.
Okay. Talk to me about what you did to stand out on Amazon, or did you need to do anything in the beginning?
Right away, there wasn't a lot of competition, and so we were able to get our product up there. We did launch with something called Amazon Launchpad at the time, which did give us a little bit of leg up within the search engine algorithm. So we were able to get that liquid product up on the site. People would search for it. We had a pretty, you know, cute name. And so we were able to acquire those customers through that. Now the game has changed dramatically, and it's an extremely competitive category. So we do have some tactics to maintain that position that we use.
And I'm going to get into specifics with you, because mm-hmm. we talked about it before the interview started, that that's what I think my audience is going to crave. But let's talk about the first thing. Launchpad on Amazon, I thought, was just their partnership with Kickstarter and a few other places to help get more attention for new products. You're saying anyone could have been a part of Launchpad, and if you were a part of Launchpad, you'd get higher search results?
It wasn't anyone. You did have to apply, and uh-huh. they were generally working with partners. Because we did have investment from a small venture capital fund, they were able to push our application through.
FoodX helped you get through. Got it.
That's correct.
What else did FoodX help you do, the accelerator you were part of?
They taught us a lot about fundraising. And so even though I had worked in the venture capital side of General Mills prior, I was only on the corporate side. I hadn't done it as an entrepreneur. And the companies we were investing in were a little bit later stage than what we were. So they really teach you how to put together a business plan, how to pitch investors, the social side of it to actually close the deal. So they taught us a lot about that, the biz dev side of it, if you will. And then another big piece was we were, you know, locked up in a room with 10 other startups, and just being in that social circle and being around like-minded people actually was extremely valuable. So those were the two biggest things for us.
How did your sales do at first when you were in Launchpad?
Not great.
No.
Yeah, not very good. Okay. For context, my business partner and I, we had both quit our jobs. When we were in the accelerator, we only had enough money to launch the product. So we slept at the office on the floor for 3 months.
Literally at night.
There was
no other home.
We couldn't afford an apartment in New York. So we literally slept on the floor of the office.
How is that? So you were at General Mills for, well, it looks like it's 3 years about, right? One year doing as a business analyst, and 1 year and a half, and then another year and a half roughly at that division that you and I talked about where you were funding startups through General Mills. Mm-hmm. You had a job before that as a demand forecast analyst for Best Buy. You had money. Was it that you were putting the money into the business, or that it costs a lot of money to live?
That's exactly right. It was both. So I had mentioned that my business partner, I had put in 50K, 25 each. That was everything that I had.
Everything you had, you were willing to put in.
All of it.
Did you feel like what is going on here? Like, Alex, it feels like you're a guy almost possessed. There's enough stats to make it make sense, but not that much. Mm-hmm. And you don't have that much money, and you're giving up a really comfortable life, right?
Yeah.
With good prospects. You start off with a General Mills logo on your resume. You've got a lot of possibilities later on. Why did you do this? Why did you feel you had to be an entrepreneur?
You know, I've always wanted to be. The short story is I grew up with, like a lot of kids, I had a picture of a Ferrari on my wall. No entrepreneurs mm-hmm. in my family. And I asked my dad, how do I get one of these? Well, you got to be a business owner, kid.
Okay.
And that was my driving force since I was probably 12. So I had been mowing lawns, selling Beanie Babies, kind of your typical kind of hustler kid story.
And what was your biggest thing?
Beanie Babies, for sure.
Beanie Babies, how much?
Yeah. You know, I don't even remember the number.
How deep into it were you?
We were probably doing 5 figures, I bet, a year. So nothing crazy.
That's a lot.
Yeah, as you know, a 12-year-old, it was good. And but so I would like, just...
This stuff would just come into your house. You'd sell it, what, on eBay?
Yep, exactly. And, wow. And there's some like swap meets and stuff we'd go to as well. You know, my mom, awesome, driving me around to all these places, helping out here and there. But so what it really came to is we were so broke at the time, and we were ready to quit. you know, we were 50K in and we're like, all right, we've spent so much money. We cannot keep putting money in. We got accepted into the accelerator. And then the question that my business partner, Andrew, and I really asked ourselves is, are we going to regret it not doing it or regret more trying and failing? And we came to the conclusion that we just had to go for it.
Okay. Regret minimization framework that Bezos came up with to decide whether to go into Amazon or not.
Yeah.
That makes sense. All right. So you're sleeping on the floor of the office. Things weren't selling very well on Amazon. What's the first big thing that worked for you?
The first big thing is we just started advertising the product in the platform and using
Amazon ads.
Exactly. Okay. Using the pay-per-click advertising to get in front of people that were searching for the product. As I had highlighted earlier on, there was a lot of search traffic. And so people were searching for cold brew coffee. Primarily in the early days, it was just people were searching how to make cold brew coffee recipe, best cold brew beans, things of that nature. But there was a lot of search traffic. And so once we were able to harness that search traffic and get them to the page, kind of the revenue story took a nice turn.
And you were figuring out advertising yourself because you've got a data background.
Exactly.
You love this stuff.
I love it.
And what was it that you were doing? Do you remember some of the tweaks that were early wins?
Yeah, the biggest thing is I look at Amazon as it's a search engine and people are there to buy. And the two biggest things that matter for the search engine is, you know, you have to have reviews. So we did a lot of that. But then there's also the goal is to not pay for the click, but to have someone organically buy. So what we learned over time is that you can do this thing called an auto PPC campaign. And you turn it on and Amazon puts your product on a bunch of random keywords and products. You can then download that report and see which keywords or products that consumers bought your product off of. And that gives you all of your insights to say, okay, someone's searching for best cold brew beans. Well, I need to make sure that those keywords are in my back end of my profile, in the front end of my profile. And then I like to pull those keywords out and put them into a separate campaign. And then I'm advertising for those keywords that I know are converting. And you can be much more efficient and it's much cheaper to do it that way.
Makes sense. Were there any keywords that didn't make sense that were surprising?
You know, the biggest insight that we got was people were searching for cold brew coffee maker. And we generated significant revenue off of that. And it logically made sense. People would go to a coffee shop and they say, well, I always make coffee myself. Why is this $6 a cup when I can make a cup for 10 cents at home? So they wanted to make it themselves. But you need a device to make it because you can't use your hot drip machine or a K-cup. So people were searching for those and they'd be like, okay, this looks like a lot of work. I'm going to buy the liquid instead. And so we had a major insight that there's a huge demand for people to make it at home. And some people are just too busy and they don't want to wait the 18 hours to make the product. And that's where our nice coffee concentrate came in.
I see that, by the way. I just typed in cold brew coffee maker. Look at what I just hit the wrong, right at the very top of it. If I can show it to you there, right at the very top is your product. And then on the bottom are these makers. All right. Maybe I'm asking you an amateur question that I feel like you're going to love answering. Why can't I just take coffee out of my coffee maker, throw some ice cubes in it, or put it in the fridge overnight and have cold brew coffee?
Well, you see,
what's the difference?
That's iced coffee, and you certainly can do that. And Starbucks has a massive business selling iced coffee. It's going to be higher acidity, and it generally tastes burnt. So cold brewing is a process similar to espresso, and those two are on the opposite ends. So when you cold brew, you do it generally for 18 hours is our recommended brew time. You use a coarser grind of coffee, and it creates a much smoother, lower acidic product. So I kind of mentioned a lot of the founding story was I wanted a higher caffeine. Well, my business partner, Andrew, had acid reflux. He actually couldn't drink hot coffee. And so cold brew is 67% less acidic. And so it's going to be a smoother, better finish. So a lot of the market growth we're seeing is people who would never drink hot coffee, but that they used to drink energy drinks or sodas. they're looking for a smoother coffee that's not bitter. And that's where cold brew comes in.
And it takes over half a day of going through the beans, just drip, 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 drip.
Most of what we do is it brews with the coffee grounds in a vessel continuously. So less of a drip and more of a steep, if you will.
Ah, okay. So if I'm looking at this, we're looking at right here that it's just sitting in the coffee beans.
Yep.
All day. And then at some point when I'm ready, I let it come down and get rid of the ground up coffee beans. That's the difference.
Yep.
And people could taste a difference between the average person can taste the difference between cold brew and iced coffee.
I wouldn't say the average person can, but people that consume the category without creams and sugars, they certainly can. There is a very noticeable difference, and that's why you're seeing such high growth. And also, it has that craft beer nature. It's kind of like having a Budweiser versus your local craft beer. There's just that craft feel to it and taste.
And you know what? And at first, I couldn't tell the difference. I thought it was just, I mean, when it comes to beer, I thought craft beer makers just had interesting marketing. And now I look back and I go, how did I ever think they tasted the same at all? How did I think that Budweiser and any craft beer taste the same? All right, let me talk about my second sponsor and then we'll get into some of the better or the more sophisticated techniques that you use for marketing. My second sponsor is a company called HostGator. If you're out there and you haven't started a company, now's the time to do it. Listen, you've got some energy in you this year. I feel like 2020, Alex, you feel that too? This is the year of inner rage, inner what the hell is going on? What do I do with my life? Potentially you're going to go, I don't know about you guys, but for me, I always think, am I going to be homeless? I think lately the am I going to be homeless thought is out of my head. But the am I going to financially ruin myself somehow or get ruined keeps coming up in my head. This is the year that all of us are dealing with that anxiety. I'm going to tell you what I do with that. I channel it to work on something, anything at all. If you're out there and you're feeling this inner rage, if you're feeling this inner what's going to happen in the future, you could just sit and just steep. Let it steep. Is that what you guys do with your coffee beans, right? Just let it. Just steepen it. Alex is smiling.
We let it steep.
Yeah. You could either do that or you could do something productive with it. You're not coffee. You're somebody who should be using that rage. You go, let me just try this thing. Andrew's been talking about creating a website. I have no idea for no good website. Fine. I'm going to go to hostgator.com/mixergy. I'm going to hit that button. I'm going to see that really it is that easy, inexpensive, no tricks, no nothing. You could see what they're charging and then create a website. And then you know what, guys? If you don't like it, get rid of it. Or if you don't like it, try again the next day. Just go hit another button on HostGator and start another little temporary website just to see what it's about. I've been journaling every single day for the majority of my life. Most days, there's nothing to say. There's nothing going on. But the fact that I'm in the habit of journaling, journaling, journaling means that when there's something raging inside of me or something I'm trying to process, I now have the habit of going and sitting and journaling. It's not this thing that goes, oh, do I have something to say? What do I do? Maybe I should go write. What do I write it? Do I do it on a piece of paper? No, I have a process. So maybe it's like 30 days of journal entries that are just okay, that I'm never going to go back and read, that somehow I'm sure are helping me, but not very much. And then boom, that one difficult day, I have the outlet and the habit of going and creating something meaningful. Same thing's happening here when you create a website with HostGator and allow it not to be the be-all and end-all business for you, but allow it to be a start for another site, and then boom, one idea takes off and you've got the muscles, you've got the ability, you've got the habit of just creating, creating, creating. If that's what you want, there's no better platform to do it than HostGator.com/Mixergy, because if you look at that middle option they've got for you, they're going to let you host unlimited domains, unlimited experiments, unlimited different sites. And you might, and you probably will do HostGator with WordPress, but you'll see, if you look on the left side of the page, after you create your account, you'll see they've got tons of open source platforms for you to create all kinds of different sites. Maybe you just go and experiment with one and delete it. My guess is you'll end up with HostGator for WordPress, but you'll have options and you'll have the habit of creating. This is the year to do it. Go to HostGator.com/Mixergy to get started. When you do, you'll get the lowest price they have, and they already have a super low price. You'll also get tagged as a Mixergy customer. And don't forget, this is absolutely guaranteed. Details on the site, lots of features on the site that I won't get into because I know it's just going to work for you. And the list of features is not what's going to sell it. It's you getting going and you're going to see the results in your life. Go to HostGator.com/Mixergy. Do you like being an entrepreneur? Or does it feel, Alex, like, oh my God, what did I get myself into? I could have been a nice cushy job right now.
Both of them for sure. As everyone's probably would align, the highs are high and the lows are low, but I wouldn't have it any other way. So depending on which day you
ask me. The other life, when I fantasize about the other life I could have taken, here's what I think about. My boss, Paul Cerbera, I remember after I graduated from school, started my own company, he and a bunch of his friends we went out driving somewhere. Each one of them had a BMW. I don't know why they all fell in love with BMWs at the time, different type of BMW. They were racing down the streets. And I thought, this is pretty good life. This is not bad. They don't have the same agita that I do, right? They have health insurance for one thing. I don't know that I could get health insurance for the rest of my life. That's where I've spaced to. What would have been if I would have driven in the BMW with them? Where does your life go? What's the vision that you have?
The vision within that corporate life was not working very hard because it's a game to play. And in big corporations, as long as people like you and you can do the baseline work, you can get away with the 20-hour work week, no problem. So that would be the only thing.
Like, why are you middle of the night emailing Andrew, who asked you to be on, and then is asking you for like detailed follow-up questions instead of being courteous? You don't have to do that.
That's right.
Right? All right, I get it. Give me some of the more sophisticated marketing techniques that you used on Amazon to grow.
So a lot of it is just getting started. So it really is a snowball. So I had mentioned the ad strategy to help build out your keyword base. That's really important. The objective is always to get someone to purchase the product without advertising, increases your margins. Some of the other really important pieces are review count. So as just a consumer ourselves, if we see a product that has 1, 5, 7, 9, 30 reviews, and there's another product next to it that's got 1,300, you're probably not going to choose that lower review count product. So we do a ton right out of the gates is when we launch a new product, we have a list of super fans and we email them, we say, hey, we just launched this product, go get it, leave a 5-star review. We'll make sure that you feel compensated from whatever that is. And we'll get that ball rolling.
When you say compensated, what do you mean by compensated? You can't give money.
No, we'll typically give them free product or things of that nature. It's illegal to do that, but everyone does. So it's kind of table stakes. So we'll just give people product and they're super fans and they love us. So, we do kind of some surprise and delight stuff. So within that same vein, reviews are really important. And if you don't ask for a review, you're probably not going to get one. So we use software that every time someone purchases a product, we do ask them to leave a review if they love it. If they don't, we say, hey, email us, tell us what we can do to make it right. The goal is to drive as many reviews that are positive as possible and mitigate all the negative reviews. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the big pieces. And then what we've learned over time is if you don't advertise at all, your search rankings will drop. Even if you have a fantastic product with great reviews, Amazon rewards people that spend with them. And it's gotten to, unfortunately, more of a pay-to-play game. If you go on Amazon and you search any keyword, there's going to be probably two organic products. The rest of them are paid above the fold. And so we now leverage every marketing vehicle that we can within Amazon. So we just kicked off video ads. We do product display ads. So if someone searches a competitor product and they go to that product detail page, we'll be on there. We've done even things like partnering with cold brew coffee makers. One of the benefits of our product is we know that if someone's buying a cold brew coffee maker, they will be buying a bag of coffee to put into that. And so we do everything in our power. The term would be attach. We want to attach our product to every single cold brew coffee maker that's sold on Amazon. And with that lens, we've tried putting inserts in cold brew makers. We do sponsored product where if someone's on a cold brew coffee maker page, our product is on there advertised. As you saw when you searched for a cold brew maker, we have a banner ad above that. We know that those people will be buying coffee and we want to make sure that they buy ours. So those are kind of some of the major things that we do. We're always optimizing. The more that you can do within Amazon, and leveraging all of their marketing vehicles, and some of them are not even paid. They just last week launched a new founders story section on products. And we instantly filled that out, added the pictures, because they will reward you for investing in them. And so we've taken it upon ourselves to do every single thing that we can to maintain that number one search ranking.
Do they do that on an automated basis, or do they have an ad team that watches who's participating and then finds ways to move the levers for you?
You know, they don't tell you how it works, but we've noticed, we've kind of A/B tested when we turn off ads, our search ranking goes down. When we do ads, our search ranking goes up. So we've seen that correlation within the last several months. We now have a specific team member at Amazon that just focuses on our advertising platform. And now that we're at that level, we're able to move the needle on some other things within the platform. But I'm not going to lie, getting started, it's very difficult to get in touch with someone. But we do strongly believe that by advertising, it shows Amazon you're willing to invest in the platform, and they will reward you through increased search rankings.
It's kind of frustrating, but you got to live in the world that you're in.
Yep.
You know, I thought that I was really good at spotting Amazon ads. I didn't realize how many of these are sponsored, and I'm just not noticing that they're sponsored. Obviously, now that I'm looking at it, I could see the sponsored label, but when I'm just scrolling quickly because I need to find something, I don't think I pay that much attention. I'd more likely spot that this Takiya patented deluxe cold brew iced coffee maker is Amazon's choice than to look for that gray marking underneath it that says that it's a sponsored ad.
And that's exactly what they're going for.
And so are you partnering up with these guys, with Takiya? They seem to be sponsoring a lot on Amazon.
You know, we haven't done any formal partnerships with them, but I can assure you that we target all of their advertising. So if someone searches for that product, we will show up on that page, whether it's through the search rankings or if you click into that product, we'll also be buying the ad space on their product. We did reach out to them in an attempt to do some marketing with them, and they did decline.
And what you want to do is ideally have them somehow give a coupon away for Busy Coffee whenever somebody buys their device, right?
That would be the best case scenario.
And until then, what you've got is this an ad from you guys? The one that says frequently bought together and I see your coffee right next to them?
You know, actually that one is free. We do not pay for that, but and there's no way for us to track how many people add to cart through that. But that's one of the ways that we rank our performance, is making sure that we show up in that space on every single cold brew coffee maker that's on Amazon.
By buying ads around them so that people do naturally buy your product with their product, and then eventually it gets into that spot. And you don't know how effective it is, but you're just counting on it working because it makes sense.
That's exactly right.
What about search engine optimization? You've told me that that's really big for you guys. Oh, you're on mute.
I apologize. That's the biggest piece for us. And it really goes back to working through those keywords and making sure that we have them in our profile. Because one of the biggest things that we've found to be the success within gaining Amazon's choice, you kind of mentioned that banner that shows up on products, is making sure that you have a high conversion rate. So as an example, you know, average products on websites convert at about 4%. Last week, our conversion rate was 65%.
On Amazon, 65% of people who hit one of your product pages buy.
Yep.
So you know what? I can see that. Well, talk to me about what you do to get that number. And then we'll do SEO. And then I also want to know, how are you getting people on a list so that you can come back and ask them for reviews? But the landing page, what are you doing to get to 65%? What's working?
Well, the biggest piece is we make sure that we're getting relevant eyeballs to the product. So when we had originally started, we're like, okay, we're in the coffee category. We're going to get anyone that's searching for coffee to get them to our page. And what we found out is not all traffic is good traffic. And so Amazon really reinforces conversion rate to be an Amazon's choice. And so we really narrowed down our focus on getting people that were searching very specifically for what we're offering to the page. And that goes back to looking at the keywords to help drive that SEO, because our goal is to organically acquire that customer and not do the paid ad, even though we do a lot of paid ads. I would rather someone click in just our organic product than one that's sponsored. So a lot of it goes back into really identifying which keywords people are searching, and in volume and in smaller, the term would be called long tail. So we leverage all available resources. So even though we're selling on Amazon, we'll go into Google keyword tool and we can put in cold brew coffee and then get search volume for every related keyword to that. And we can then prioritize our list of back-end keywords and words that we put on our profile and in our title to make sure that we're organically ranking for those keywords. And then we do negative keywords for things that would not be relevant or that someone would search, which you might think would work, but actually could negatively affect you. And so we're constantly looking at improving our keyword search, because that's how we can leverage the search engine of Amazon to acquire those customers for free.
Meaning, in the past, we might have thought somebody who's looking for hot coffee might also consider cold brew coffee. If they're looking for hot coffee, we might buy an ad and then get them to our page and hope that they'll buy. The conversion rate on that is not very strong, which then hurts your conversion rate overall, which means that Amazon's not likely to promote your page in the future. That's the type of thinking.
That is exactly right. Great example.
Give me some of the software that you use to market yourself.
Yeah, some of the main ones we use is Seller Labs, and they mm-hmm. have wonderful tools where they can give you what your search ranking is, search volume by keywords. You had mentioned kind of that email list, and they automate your emails. So when someone buys the product, they automatically email them with information, whether that's an Amazon review request or shipping notifications or product details. You can choose that. So we do that. We also use a tool called Scope, and that allows us to look at different categories and look at our competitive landscape. As an example, I mentioned we have 15% market share. We know that because we pull scope reports and we look at our category and look at our competitors to know what their sales rates are versus our sales rate. And then we measure those over time. Mm-hmm. Those are really kind of the major ones that we use. And then
Scope is a Seller Labs tool, right?
Yeah, that's one of them within the Seller Labs platform.
Okay. And you were saying there was one other tool that you use?
That was the main one. We use a bunch of the features within Seller Labs. I think Geek Seller, I can't recall if that's within Seller Labs or is a separate one, but we do use some of those products as well. I think there's another one called Feedback Genius, and I don't know if that's within Seller Labs or it also is another separate tool, but those are the names that pop out in my head.
Geek Seller is its own product, and it looks like it works on Amazon and on Walmart. What do you think about Walmart?
You know, we're actually, fun information. We just submitted our new items for Walmart. The difference between, they're not live yet, but the difference with Amazon is we do what's called a 3P or third party seller. Mm-hmm. So we actually own the inventory. We ship that inventory that we own to Amazon. And then when someone buys it, they fulfill it for us out of their warehouse, but we own the inventory all the way until mm-hmm. that customer pays for it. Within Walmart, we do what's called a 1P relationship, where we sell our inventory to Walmart at a wholesale price, and then they own that inventory, and then they resell it to the shopper on walmart.com. So we're just getting started there. We actually had the buyer reach out to us because we've been pretty successful on Amazon. So they reached out to us and we just established that relationship.
It seems like now they're available in store according to Walmart's website.
We do have a couple of products in store. It's probably some 12-ounce items that we do have some on Amazon, but those will be focused. We're actually transitioning to a new product format for that at Walmart that's all going to be 1 pound. And that was just a learning that we had over time.
1 pound bag of coarse coffee.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing over here. So when you say that Seller Labs emails people and says, go review our product, that's using Amazon's email system, right? Because you don't get your customer's email address.
That's right. And that's actually a massive frustration for us and all Amazon sellers is we don't get that data. We can't remarket them.
And what you're using is, it's a crappy email from Amazon. I've never once responded to one of those messages. I actually am the type of person who has an automated filter on my Gmail that automatically takes any email from Amazon and tosses it into the archive so I can search for it, but I don't want to be bothered by it because there are too many messages. That's awful. Have you found anything that works for getting a direct relationship with your customer?
Yeah, we leverage, one of the things that they taught me at General Mills, they say your package is your number one asset. And so what we've done is we've really gone deep into who the consumer is and the use case of the product. And we've found that generally people are buying this for their first time making cold brew coffee at home. And so they're looking for resources and information on how to actually make the product. And so what we've done is we have some copy on our packaging that says, we spent 5 years trying to craft the perfect product, learn about how we do it, busycoffee.com/how-to-brew. And then we get them to type in that URL, and that's actually one of our most visited landing pages on our site. And then we instantly have an email pop-up that captures email, and then we're able to use that to remarket to them over time.
That's the busycoffee.com/how-to-brew. And then on the other side of that on your bag is the busycoffee.com/swag, where I can redeem my points with every bag of coffee that I get. I think I get 1 point.
Yep.
And is that working for you?
You know, that one doesn't work as well. We're actually transitioning that to a QR code to, again, refocus on capturing that email address, because then they have to mail it in, and it's less effective. It's more work. We're learning that consumers are very lazy, and they want to do the minimal amount of work to get as much value as possible. And so we're focusing on doing that. We recently launched those swag items for purchase. And we instantly, within a week, sold more items of that swag than we had in the last year of people sending in coupons for free stuff.
Wow. More people are likely to buy it than they are to redeem coupons to get it. And then what percentage of people are going to the how-to page?
It's probably about 5%. Okay. So it's still a small percentage, but on a total visits basis, it's enough to where we certainly are putting some effort behind it.
All right, now you're going over to your website. Starting now, you've built this. Well, you had the site for a bit, but now you're making a push to sell on the site.
Yeah, we've always been of the mindset of Amazon's a snowball, so we want to put all effort into that channel to be as successful as possible. We're now at the point where we've gotten to a pretty good business on Amazon, and we've run into a couple of issues where it's quite high risk to have so much business with Amazon, where they can shut your profile off at any time for any reason, that we want to just mitigate that risk and get them onto our site. So we don't even offer currently our ground coffees, which are Amazon's bestseller, on our site. So we are launching those this month, though. So we're very excited about that.
It feels like what's probably going to do best is office coffee. Well, it's a little bit harder now, but it seems like that's the move on a website. What do you think is going to do best, that or wholesale? It feels like, having interviewed other people, the website is where you get wholesale sales.
I think we've done well on the wholesale. That's generally been, so we actually we're a manufacturer, so we brew the coffee ourselves now. And so that wholesale has been primarily actually food service, where we make a concentrate private label to them. The office coffee was doing well, but as you said, with everyone working from home, we actually saw a massive shift where people were now making coffee on their own, but we haven't ever done the ground coffee. So we're very optimistic about that. We do know some other coffee brands that have been successful there. We're hoping that becomes the major driver with kind of a coffee club subscription, but that's certainly TBD.
And how have you done since people have started working from home? How have sales been?
Out of this world, I would say.
Really?
Yes, we have our retail business on a, we look at, the term is called velocity. So how many units per store per week are you selling? That's doubled in the grocery store. And then our Amazon business has more than tripled.
Because of what? Why are more people buying from you now?
As unfortunate as it is, the majority of coffee dollars are actually done through coffee shops, and they're shut down. And so that demand did not go away. It just shifted to different sales channels. And because we did have that number one bestseller, we were able to capture a substantial amount of that demand.
Got it. You're saying that all the people who would go into coffee shops to buy coffee now have to go make it themselves. And that makes sense. I guess I always thought of coffee at coffee shops as an addition to what you get at home, that it's there because it's so convenient. But I can see that there are a lot of people here in San Francisco anyway who don't make coffee at home, who just want to go out and get it. The restaurants on Valencia Street all started to open up these like doorway sales options, you know, where you can just walk up to the doorway, pick up something you ordered online or place an order and then wait a little bit on the sidewalk and then pick it up. And I thought the biggest seller would be that suddenly you could buy alcohol on the streets. Like restaurants were now allowed to, or at least the city was looking the other way while they were selling alcohol on the street. And some of them had interesting looking drinks. Nope. Freaking coffee shops. Even at a time when everyone was scared of getting COVID from cardboard, they were buying coffee in those cardboard cups. All right. I get it. Alex, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. I'm looking forward to having you back on. Before this interview started, I went to SimilarWeb to get a sense of what your traffic was on busycoffee.com. It's minuscule. It's hardly anything, right?
That is correct. Yeah.
So hopefully we'll do another interview where you figured out what it takes to sell on your own website and you'll come back here and talk about how you did it. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic.
All right. And for everyone out there, if you want to go check it out, it's Bizzy. Do you regret having that name instead of like Busy Coffee?
You know, no, I love it. I always do have to explain that it's not busy. It's busy, but it allowed us to identify the problem and the solution in the name and we could get the trademark for it.
It feels like buzzy for some reason when I see it, like there's some kind of energy around it.
I do get a lot of emails that have the subject line "Buzzy Coffee," and it's very easy to weed those salespeople out, but it also is misinterpreted at times.
Well, it is a beautiful brand. I like what you guys have done. It's bizzycoffee.com. Go find them on their own website, and of course on Amazon, as we've talked about here today. If you want to follow up with my two sponsors. That's not a way for me to pitch the sponsors. If you need to hire, go to toptal.com/mixergy if you need to get a new website built or transition your website to one that will work better, to a hosting company that will work better and cost less. Go to hostgator.com/mixergy. Alex, thank you so much for being here.
Yes, thanks for having me, Andrew.
Bye, everyone.